Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Make Sense with Mentally, the show that places power in your hands and information for your mind. Let others leave small lines, but not you. Let others place their future in someone else's hands, but if you listen to the show, you'll make sure it's not you. We'll provide you with the keys, but it's up to you to unlock the door. Welcome to Make Sense with Menelik. I am your host. Today we're talking about countering the conspiracy to destroy black boys. More importantly, we're going to get into solutions that we have to rectify the situation that's going on across the country with black youth. My guest today is the founder of Urban Male Initiative. It's a program that provides academic support for first generation minority male students. This individual, I've watched him grow, and he's not a talker, he's a doer. He's on the national scene speaking and helping individuals all across the country, especially in the city of Chicago. He's lighting it up, and he's changing the lives of young males. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on my guest, Marlon Haywood. Marlon, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate that introduction.
Oh, yeah, man, it's good. People don't know, man, Marlon, man, you've been doing it for a minute, man. You've always been innovative, and any idea you had, you've always brought out and gave to allow other people to benefit from it. So I've always appreciated that about you.
Yeah.
So to see what you're doing now, man, is wonderful, man. You're a wonderful example for
not just others, but
for myself as well. So,
yeah.
So go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I'm born and raised on the south side of Chicago, specifically in the Inglewood area is where I grew up at. I attended Northern University, did grad there. Currently, I'm a doctoral student in the Educational Leadership Program, and I work at Rush University Medical Center as a Health Disparities Research Fellow. I'm also contracted to be adjunct faculty for City Colleges of Chicago, where I've taught at Malcolm X and Kennedy King, and within that time, you know, travel and speaking, where I've started Marlon Speaks, I've had the opportunity, the privilege, and the honor to do that. And, you know, just have a couple of mentoring programs at DeSable High School, like Crane, and do mentoring through my fraternity, where we have mentor, teacher, brother. We mentor a young man in the Roseland area. So that's just to give a brief synopsis, just summary of myself without kind of going too far into it.
Okay, cool. Very humble, brother, so I appreciate that, too.
Yeah.
What motivated you to work with black male youth? What did you see that made you say, hey, you know what, I need to do something? Was it somebody else, or was it just your experiences?
Well, I would say that there were a couple of reasons or things in my life that kind of motivated me to work with black males. One, you know, growing up in Inglewood, I, you know, was around a lot of women, my mom, my aunts, my grandmother. You know, I saw them doing their thing. You know, my father's always been in my life as well. But when it came to looking at the men, I did not see a lot of positive men doing the same type of work at the same level that I was seeing the women doing it at. And I never forget when I got to NIU that one of the first organizations that I joined was Black Male Initiative that was started by Don Bramlett. And I saw, you know, all these positive black men. It was in a meeting, and one of the things he talked about is that our goal is to make sure black men graduate. That's our whole focus, our whole goal. And that was my freshman, got involved within that. And then my second year, I got involved within my fraternity. And from there, I remember being in parties, dancing and acting in a certain type of way, putting stuff out there on social media that, you know, I didn't care about. And I had older men tell me that's not how young men should carry themselves. That's not how they should be putting stuff out there through social media. You should dress like this, and this is what you should be doing. And it began to change my image to think about myself better. And so because I had people that literally poured into me to help me to become the individual who I am, because I came to college one way, but I left another. And that's why I'm really so passionate about helping other people, because I think about the people who helped me to become a leader who, when I didn't even believe in myself, I remember Quincy Payton, he was a counselor in the TRIO program at NIU. And I never forget sitting in his office. I was kind of didn't know what I wanted to do as far as for programming wise. I, you know, biology, I was like, I don't want to do this no more. And he was like, you know, I can literally see you traveling and speaking. I can see you like a Cornel West. I can see you traveling, sitting on panels and as a premier educator. You know, I'm like, what, me? And that was the first time somebody had ever told me that they could see me speaking and traveling and being that type of person. And from that, that gave me that hope, that inspiration that I can see myself that way, all because he said it. And that's why I want, and that's why I like to do the same thing that people did to me to kind of help motivate me.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. So you had individuals pour themselves into you, and because of that, now you pour yourself into other individuals. Who are these role models specifically? Can you talk about the men and women throughout your life that have helped guided you, and what it means to you, and what it was to you to see them?
Well, yeah, I mean, I start just from, I guess you can say, from the past to present. You know, from the past, if I had to say role models, Dr. Brian Hemphill, I start with him. I never forget when I graduated undergrad, I didn't get accepted into no graduate school. Like, my GRE score was not the best. My GPA was okay. It was like a 2.5 or something like that, 2.5, 2.6, but I was a biological science major. So my GPA was not as high as it should be. And I was like, man, what am I going to do? I didn't get accepted into no grad program. And I was walking through the hallway, and he said, how's everything going? What are you, you know, planning to do after you graduate undergrad? I was like, man, I don't know. I guess just go back to Chicago. And he said, no, you're not going back to Chicago. We're going to get you into grad school here. We're going to make sure you get a grad assistantship. And he literally took a hold of me and made, you know, helped me to become that leader within working in student affairs and higher education. I look at people like Dr. Bowles at NIU as well, in judicial affairs. I remember my car got broken into when I came back home. I didn't have no all my books, my laptop, everything was in there. I didn't have no money to get me, you know, get books and stuff. And he took the time, and he was like, man, what's wrong? I'm like, man, my car got broken into. I don't have no books. I ain't got no laptop. He said, how much was everything? How much you estimate everything was to replace it? And I was like, oh, I would say probably about this much. He literally like, okay, he took out a, like, he got a check. He like, okay, he told his secretary, write a check for him to replace everything that got stolen. I was like, what? And here was, you know, he didn't ask any questions. He didn't ask for no receipt. He didn't say, well, I'm trusting you, don't lie to me. He didn't say any of that, you know. And the fact that he believed so much in me that he, like, I got to make sure that this young man go to school and do what he's supposed to do. So I look at him and Dr. Bowles, and then I look at my fraternity brothers who, in times that I was just, like, didn't see myself as a leader, as a student leader, they would tell me, man, I could see you running to be student activities board president or student association president. I'm like, who, me? I'm small, I'm short, I look young. Who's going to listen to me? But those individuals were kind of speaking life into me, as I call it, and was encouraging me to be that next leader. And then most recently, my pastor, you know, John Hanna, just really speaking to me about just my future, my destiny, and, you know, just being accountable as a young man and preparing myself for what's to come. So when I look at all these individuals that have been placed in my life, they have truly helped me over a period of time to help me, you know, to be where I'm at. And there's a lot more men that have helped me and mentor, but it just wasn't one. It's like it's a multitude of them that have been those role models for me.
Right. Man, that's beautiful. I remember just seeing you on NIU's campus, and one thing that made you stand out is that everybody's trying to do the norm. Let's throw a party, let's do this, let's do that. And you were willing to say, well, I'm going to do something. Maybe you weren't saying it, but you were doing it. I'm going to do something nobody else has done. Oh, let's do a carnival. Let's do a convo party. Let's do this tent party. Let's do these different things that nobody else is doing. And when you see somebody doing that, you know they have something special. They can keep going with those ideas. And all the ideas you had was in service of others. So, like I said before, it's no surprise for me to see you doing what you're doing as far as giving back and going around speaking, because you always had that, I have a different idea, and if I could get it out there, it could benefit a lot of people, you know, open up a lot of people's eyes, you know.
So man, you're speaking my story.
That's exactly how it went.
And I never even had to say that. So that's just very, that's very interesting that you were able to observe that, because literally that's how it was for me. I wanted to see different. Like when I first came to NIU, you know, it wasn't what I expected it to be. Let me say that. And it's not attacking anybody in the organization. It's just not, it was not at the level that I expected it to see. And I had heard so much about college and how college is the best years of your life. And I said, I want to experience the stories that I heard before me. And that, from there, is when I get to the place of, okay, have we done this? Okay, why can't we do this? And if so, then what can we do to make this happen if it's never been done before? And that's kind of the mindset that I had. Like, I was in a place where ideas would come to me as I would be walking down the street, and I'd just pull out a pen and paper and just start writing it down, put it in my pocket, and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to make sure this happens. And that's exactly how it happened.
That's beautiful. For those listening, that's a jewel. He just dropped a jewel. He said when he had an idea, pulled out that pen and pad, and he wrote it down. You know what I mean? A short pencil beats a long memory any day. Any day. Yeah. Well, let's get into black men. Let's talk about black men for a second. What are some of the harmful trends that you see affecting black males today?
Well, I talk about this a lot. Family structure. We have it where within the black community, we have numerous fatherless homes. And female-headed households are leading our black community. And if you actually look at statistics, what crime is prevalent and happens the most, it happens the most where there are majority female-headed households. Now, nothing against our black women, but that shows you that the man is supposed to be there in the household, and he's not. And that's number one. Then, you know, number two is their lack positive role models within the black community. And so because we lack those positive role models, so if you think about it, if the father's not in the household, then who do they turn to look at as their role model? They look at the streets. And the guys typically in the streets are the drug dealers, the people that are involved in gangs. They're looking at them with the fast money, fast money, the nice cars, the women. They are attracted to that. And I'm also want to do a study on this, hopefully one day. But you look at the media and the images that are portrayed of the black man is typically not positive. I remember growing up, and I don't tell many people this, but I remember growing up, and I had a negative image of what it meant to be black. I never forget, it was me and my cousins. We had to be real, real young, probably like 5 or 6 years old, or maybe 4. I don't remember how old, but we was really young. And they was like, I'm black and I'm proud. And I'm like, I'm not black, I'm white. He's like, no, you black. I'm like, no, I'm not. And I remember when they were like, you black. And I went to my mama. I said, Mama, am I black? And then she said, yeah, boy, you black. And I started crying. I said, no, why am I black? Because I remember looking at all the TV shows and the news, and everything I saw was negative towards blacks. Like, I saw blacks as slaves. You know, I saw, you know, TV shows of blacks living in the ghetto. And it was just, so I associated the negative images or negativity with being black, because that's what I constantly saw on TV. And then when I walked outside, because I grew up in Inglewood, In that neighborhood, you know, you're looking at the crackheads, the abandoned buildings. You know, you can't walk too far because of safety reasons. And then anytime we went somewhere nice, it was because it was a majority white neighborhood. So now my association with positive began to be associated with white, where my association with negative began to be black, because that's what I experienced in the environment, and then when I was turning on TV, what I had saw. And I think that's the issue that affects many of our black men today, is that they're looking at the negative imagery on TV, There's no representation or a role model in the household, and then the role models that they are looking to are not the right representation of what it means to be a man.
Right, yeah, that's true. This doctor from Harvard, Dr. David McClelland, and I believe he's passed now, he did this study on what motivated people and how can I tell somebody's going to be successful or not or whatever. And one thing he observed during the study, it was a 30-year study, he observed that if you saw a certain image of yourself and you associated that with yourself, positive or negative, you were going to act that out. And then you were going to associate with those individuals. And then you would, do what it said do. So if you're hanging out with 9 broke people, they already could tell you're going to be the 10th because you're associating with that. And we didn't realize that when we look at, and we don't realize that when we look at TV, media, music, all of that, that those are forms of association. So we associate that. And so what we put in our mind, it automatically comes out. So the image or the picture, the idea we have in our mind comes out. And when it comes out, you can see it in our communities. We can see it in how we dress and how we talk and how we act. You know, so there's no, when you want to know what's going on in the black community, we need a new idea of who we are. We need a new image, you know, that positive, clean image. You know what I mean? That will actually show us who we are. That's why the work you're doing is so important. You know, how do you think the music affects us? Is it okay just to listen to certain music, or do we need to be cautious or explain to our young people when they're listening to certain music?
Well, okay, I tell people this. Music does have an effect on your actions. There are some people who will fight you tooth and nail to say, it doesn't matter the type of music that I listen to. It doesn't affect me. All right. I'll use this as an example. Put yourself in a room with a young lady you might have an interest in, right? And the young lady might have an interest with you. It's after midnight. You turn on R. Kelly, Usher, Trey Songz. What do you think is going to happen after about 10, 15, 20 minutes of probably playing that song? Consistent
right.
types of songs. And same thing when you're looking at drill music. It literally encourages actions. It's been studies that have shown that they play nothing but just violent, angry music. You know, these people listen to it for so many hours, and they show signs and mood swings of being more angry and violent and aggressive. I never forget at the NIU convocation party. This is at the end, and DJ RS at the time. Some people know, some people might not, but. After the party was over, you know, I was like, you know, dude, we want to make sure everybody kind of leave in an orderly fashion. And so he was like, all right, I got you. He played Arthur after the party was over. And then all of a sudden, you know, you hear everybody singing, even the thugs, the drunk people, the hot people, like, hey, as I'm walking down the street, hey, and then, so everybody was singing along to the whole Arthur theme song. And then I think he played, like, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air song right after that. And what I saw was people, like, laughing, dancing, leaving in a positive mood because it brought back a positive memory for them. And that's the thing why I tell people, if you're listening to music that's always saying, kill this, beat that, do this, 9 times out of 10, when people are getting ready to do something, they listen to certain music to pump them up, to get them to that level. You have to be – it's like – what you're feeding yourself. Like when you feed yourself food, certain type of foods have an effect on your body. Same thing when you listen, when you put it in context of music and movies and television shows that you watch, that what are you feeding yourself? And if you're constantly feeding yourself negative imagery, negative music, negativity constantly, then you are going to get to a place of being negative and then putting it out there without you even realizing that, man, how did I get to this place where I became so negative, so angry? Because that's what you're always listening to and watching, that subliminally you didn't even realize that you have become what you have been listening to and watching for so long.
Right. Yeah, it's 100% true. 100% true. Well, let's talk about some of the things that you're doing to counter these negative influences. So let's talk about some of the programs you have going on and the things that you guys do to motivate young black males and build the self-esteem of these guys.
Well, there's a couple of programs. So one of the things that we have done, I've done this with my fraternity organization called Mentor Teacher Brother, we do a mock trial competition where we typically have taken about 100 to 150 young men from different high schools across Chicago. What we do is that they get shirts and ties, you know, make sure they have belts, get them dressed up, and we take them downtown, and they're split up into teams and groups with different young men from different high schools, and they have lawyers and volunteers as well that are assigned to them to give them mock trial case competitions, and some people are like acting out being the prosecutor, or other people are acting out being a defense lawyer, or they're acting out being the person that's on the stand. And from there, they're all getting prepared. Well, whoever wins out of this group can get the highest score, and then they go into a large mock trial case competition. And it's really giving them the opportunity to see how the legal system works. And I think it's important to kind of show them where they don't have to wait to get there, where they're standing in front of a judge, but then they can see what mistakes not to make before they get there and then maybe think about it. And we also, what I've done is that I remember when I first graduated grad school, they had me on the West Side Learning Center on the West Side of Chicago. And this is working with people who are working to get their GED. And I started a mentor group there. That's where Urban Male Initiative came from before it evolved into Urban Male Network. And these young men, some of them had tattoos on their faces, on their necks. I mean, it was just different type of young men. And I took them on college visits and tours to, like, NIU for a weekend. And I let them go experience the parties, the shows. And they was just a total different person. Like, at first they wasn't even thinking about college. Like, man, I ain't going to college. College is not for me. But after that, they was like, I got to go to college. What do I got to do? And I saw a change in their determination to really work harder to get help, because they had a reason and the motivation behind wanting to do better. And I think sometimes we just have to show them a reason and kind of, you know, give them a reason to dress up. And then when they see how they look dressed up and how it's different from them, and that's kind of how you counteract those negative images that have been put out there typically with them.
Well, let's talk about society a little bit. We talked about the things we can do and the things we see. Do you think society has played a role and is playing a role in a conspiracy to destroy black males, or in influencing a destructive pattern of death among black males?
I had this conversation all the time. It can go one of two ways, right? I wouldn't say that society is there is a conspiracy theory to kill our black men. No. But I do believe that the way that our society is set up, it is not set up for our black men or for us as black people to win. The number one killer of black people it's sad to say it that way, but are black people. And I think I was in Inglewood like last week, and I saw so many huge buildings that was vacant and boarded up with vacant lots right next to them. And then I looked at the businesses that were in those same communities that were not owned by us. You know, you had a liquor store, you had the little corner store owned by Arabians and the Chinese. Now imagine if we came in and bought up these properties that was probably little of nothing, and then we began to rent them out or have them as our own homes, open up our own businesses within our own community, and then the black dollar stayed within the black community. If you look at other communities, they circulate everything, that the dollar stays longer within their communities. The issue with us is that our dollar leaves faster than it actually comes in the hand of people within our community, which is why we're not seeing us be built up the way that we should. Now, when it comes into conspiracy against the black man or just the black race, we can go back to government policies that have been put into place from the Clinton administration when it comes to just policies and things that are put into place that have locked black men up when it comes to the war on drugs, or when you look at how they took black men or men out of the household when it came to them receiving such a, you know, government assistance. So those type of things. And then when you look at the contracts that the city awards to do certain jobs in the city, like these million-dollar contracts, they are not being awarded typically to black individuals. It's not coming back to our community. And so these type of issues are happening, and I think that are hurting us, but I think the biggest change will have to come from us first. And then that's how we begin to stand up against everything that's happening.
Well, I agree with you. I think when you – it's kind of like basketball. And I spoke to BMI about a month back, and I said I had a similar question. And it's like basketball. Michael Jordan, he had a nemesis in the Detroit Pistons, right? And their whole goal was to stop him. You know, they wanted to stop Mike, stop the Bulls, because the Pistons wanted to win. Now, if Michael Jordan and the Bulls would have stopped and said, look, we're not playing, they're following us, but what they ended up doing was rising to
dirty.
The occasion. Okay, this is the Pistons played dirty, so the Bulls had to rise to the occasion to win. So this is what we need to do to beat them. And once we beat them enough, they'll no longer be a problem. A lot of the times what I see is that we'll stop and we'll say, well, look, they're doing this or they're doing that. Well, look, they're trying to win too. And this doesn't excuse a lot of the actions we see. This doesn't excuse it. But we have to formulate a plan to be better. So when we see those buildings, we need to buy them up. We need to invest in each other, you know what I mean, and invest in businesses. And, you know, we have a mentality where when we get it, we leave, you know what I mean? I got mine, I'm gone, and we'll see you every once in a while. And we need to change that mentality. I think the biggest enemy we have, a friend of mine, Abedin Olanderin, always says that if you have no enemy within, the enemy without can do you no harm. You know what I'm saying? And I think our biggest enemy is within right now, you know?
Yeah. So, because growing up, like you said, I didn't see black men owning property or owning businesses. And I just didn't see that. A lot of that was not something that I saw when it came to young
right.
black men being successful.
Right, right. Well, when it comes to these young men, how important, and to us as well, how important it is to be a part of a positive organization?
Well, it is. And well, I think a lot of them, and I've actually had conversations with them, some of them really feel like, I'm doing okay. I don't need a role model. I mean, I don't need a mentor. I'm good. I mean, I'm doing pretty okay right now. And I tell them, I say, at every level that you go to in life, every new level, next level, you need a mentor. You need somebody to help guide you. You can't do this thing, as they call life, on your own. And I tell you, if you want to see how successful that you're going to be, take a look at your five closest friends, or the people that you spend the most time with. Your five closest friends is the sum total of you. So, like, each one of those individuals, when you add them up, they individually have something that connects with you, which is why they are your friend. They wouldn't be your friend if it was not no type of connection, you know, which is why typically you may have been friends with somebody when you was young, but then you become older and there's no longer a connection with them because you don't have anything in common like you used to. Well, same type of concept. You want to make sure that you got people that are going to push you to the next level. For me, the reason I ended up starting a doctoral program was because all of my close friends had started a year before I did. So I'm like, man, I can't just sit out and not do it, because if I keep sitting out, they're going to all pretty soon be doctors, so-and-so, and I'm just going to be like, man, I wish I could have did it. So that pushed me to do it. And then I started having friends that were, you know, looking into getting property. That made me want to do it. And so you have to get around people that push you to the next level, because if you don't, then you will be okay with being just the status quo or being okay with being average. And if you got to be around people that are above average, because that pushes you to want to continuously keep doing better and make yourself better. So that's why being a part of positive organizations is so important. One, so you can network with other people. That's what it's all about. That's how people move to the next level. That's how people get opportunities. It's because they're part of organizations with people who are like-minded as them. And that's what it's all about.
Right. Right. Okay, so let's say I'm not in Chicago. Hold on. Let's say I'm not in Chicago. And I want to get some of the skills and some of the information that you have? What are some of the things I can do? I'm not there, I'm not around you, but what are some of the things I can do to get some of that information that you have and apply it to young black men?
So you're saying, so I want to make sure I have the question right. You said if a person is not in Chicago but want to get some of the information I have?
Some of the information and strategies you use that help and assist young black men.
Or just in general, like you're saying, just in broad, or you're saying specifically for me, which one is it? I guess I'm trying to understand that.
Well, it would be in general, but from you, because what I'm seeing is a lot of the things you're doing is successful, and success breeds success. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, or if they want to get that information from you, how do they go about doing that?
Oh, okay, well, Facebook, I would say, like you've had me. Follow me on Facebook, which is just Marlon Haywood, M-A-R-L-O-N, then last name Haywood, H-A-Y-W-O-O-D, Instagram. I think right now we're in the social media generation. You got Haywood in one. It's just my Instagram. So those are the two platforms that I use the most. And because I used to tell people, hey, check out my website. But then I started realizing that people nowadays don't check, go to websites like that, especially the younger generation. But when I start telling people to follow me on Facebook or like me on Instagram, like, then that's when they started actually, like, I started getting people following and responding and sending me messages and contacting me. I'm like, oh, okay, this is what I need to start doing. And that's kind of how I started to do it. So my suggestion with people, even if it's just not me, if there are people who you inspire and that you look up to, that you say, hey, I like what they're doing, I mean, we are now in a time when you can connect with just about anybody, whether it's through LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. You can follow them, you can see what they're doing, and then you can reach out and find ways to reach out to them to make that connection, to make it happen.
That's excellent. Well, look, I know this interview is short, but I really appreciate you and what you're doing and what you've been about. If individuals want you to come and speak, I know you've been speaking a lot. Are you still willing to go around and do that?
Oh, definitely. I love speaking. That's one of the main has become a passion of mine. So, yeah, I speak in Chicago. I speak outside of Chicago, outside of the state. You know, so again, just people contact me through, you know, social media, finding me there, or they can email me at marlinspeakschicago@gmail.com. Either way.
That's beautiful. Well, again, I'd like to thank you, and I'd like to tell you how proud I am of you and how appreciative I am of you for the work you're doing with the young black men and females in the community, because they're affected by the work you do as well. You and Richard Taylor,
yeah.
Man, I can't speak about you guys enough, man. I really enjoy what you're doing.
Well, we're going to get Richard next on here. We're going to get we're gonna both be on here.
Yeah, we'll get him. So, look, to the listening audience, next week we have Marissa. She's a female fitness instructor, and she's doing a wonderful job with helping a lot of young ladies develop encouragement and fitness goals. And then also we'll have Dr. Malik Rahim, who is going to talk to us about mental health. This is Mental Health Awareness Month, so we definitely want to go into that. But I want to end the show a little differently today. I'm very proud of Marlon, and I was listening to this quote from Will Smith. And I want to end this show with this quote, because this reminds me of Marlon and individuals like him. So, Marlon, again, I appreciate you, and keep doing what you're doing. So we're going to end the show with this quote from Will Smith, and that'll take us out. So God bless to everybody. If you need to get in contact with me, you can reach me at mentallyshaw.com. The replay of the show will be on right after this in a live update itself. So here we go.
Appreciate it. I don't want to be an icon. I want to be an idea. You know, I want to represent an idea. I want to represent possibilities. I want to represent magic, right? That you're in a universe and 2 + 2 = 4.
Mm-hmm.
2 + 2 only = 4 if you accept that 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 is going to be what I want it to be,
mm-hmm.
You know. And there's a redemptive power that making a choice has, you know, rather than feeling like you're at effect to all the things that are happening. Make a choice. Like, you just decide what it's going to be, who you're going to be, how you're going to do it. Just decide. And then from that point, the universe is going to get out your way.